Hi, welcome to the UCB Theater New York podcast for the week of February 21st. Sitting across from me is the very dapper Will Hines.
And sitting across from me is the fashionable, without trying too hard, John Frusciante.
Thank you for noticing. That's what I try to do.
We are going to do what we always do, and that is have a podcast about the goings-on of the UCB Theater in New York.
For That's right.
First part, we'll talk about some shows coming up this week. Then in our second segment, we're going to interview Michael Hartney and John Flynn, who are co-hosting the Same Sex Spectacular variety show this Saturday at midnight. And in the third portion, we're going to ramble on about who knows what, some improv topic of concern to us.
But first, we're going to do our new segment, Shoutouts!
Shoutouts! Hey, everybody. Sheila in Queens wants John to know that this next walk-on is for him.
And Betty in the Bronx wants Will to know that she's tagging out for him.
Oh, God. You and I would hate that show. So what's going on this week at the theater?
Lots of great things.
Good heavens.
See you next week.
Bye.
Monday, February 22nd is Comedy Central's Ugly Americans, A Sneak Peek.
Now that's a show that's coming up.
Yes, that is a show that's coming up. Ugly Americans is Comedy Central's new animated show.
Okay.
And they are doing a show here to promote that show and to bless us all with some comedy from people that are involved in the show.
Big names. I'm sensing big names.
Kurt Metzger, Larry Murphy, Randy Perlstein, and Matt Oberg.
Oh, wow.
These are some cast members and writers for the show.
Matt Oberg is one of the funniest people ever.
He's funny, right?
Yeah.
And Randy Perlstein, you may know from New Excitement.
Oh, yeah, I know Randy. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Great.
So there's going to be some stand-up. There's going to be some exclusive clips from the new show.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other surprise fun stuff to promote that show. And that's Monday, February 22nd, 9:30.
Okay, I like that. I'll tell you what else is happening this week, John.
Please.
Wednesday at 9:30, The Nights of Our Lives.
Oh, I love this show.
And that's a storytelling show created by Chris Gethard and John Flynn, right?
Yes, that's
and,
right.
They were co-creators, and that's where some of the theater's strangest people and best storytellers get up and confess some spectacularly amazing and often horrible episodes from their lives.
Yeah, you will hear some of the most embarrassing shit from people, but you will also think it's hilarious and laugh.
Yeah.
Rightly so. And this is their four-year anniversary show this Wednesday.
Really?
So okay. It's a best-of show. I believe John Flynn's going to come in here and talk about it a little bit more at length.
Yes.
But that is a show that you definitely want to see Wednesday the 24th at 9:30.
Okay.
And Friday, the 26th, we have This Is About Smith, which is a new show that is exactly what it says it is. It's about Smith College. It's a sketch comedy show that takes place in the universe of Smith College. And the show was written by Lila Cohan, who is a sketch writer.
She's on the mod team High Treason.
That is correct.
Directed by Caitlin Taggart.
Yes.
Who writes 50% of the sketch bank that go up every year.
Or directs.
Yeah. So that sounds great. So when is that? That's Friday at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And John, and then we have the midnight show, Same Sex Spectacular, which we're going to talk with about.
That's right. The Same Sex Spectacular. We have Michael Hartney and John Flynn, the organizers of the show, coming in to talk about that. And that's this Saturday at midnight.
It'll be a queer-tacular, sketchy, presentationally awesome performance.
Yeah, celebration of all things LGBT.
Okay.
And that those are the highlights of these shows going on this week at the theater. Of course, you can see information about these shows and everything else we have going on at ucbtheater.com.
Okay, that sounds great.
All these shows we talked about are $5. Ridiculous.
I can't believe that.
Believe it.
Wow.
Start believing it.
It's a great deal.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll be back.
Oh, wait, I'm wrong. This Is About Smith was $10.
Oh,
sorry.
See, I knew there's a catch.
Friday night primetime
you
show,
huckster
$10.
Salesman. No, there's always something. Yeah,
yeah. There's also
I get it.
You can get some. You pick up some snake oil while you're there.
Oh, dear Lord. I know where this is going. I'll have some. Okay, well, so that's the shows this week. Stick around, and in a second, we'll be back to talk with Michael Hartney and John Flynn about the Same Sex Spectacular.
That's right. Stick around. Hi, welcome back to the UCB Theater New York podcast. We're here with Michael Hartney and John Flynn of the Same Sex Spectacular.
Hey. Yo, what up?
Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So tell us about your show.
Well, it's a gay variety show. We decided to take advantage of the wealth of LGB talent at the theater. And so we're doing a variety show. And John and I are both hosting, each as Tim Gunn.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
That's awesome.
Is one of you, are you both the exact same Tim Gunn, or does one of you have like a slightly different... Or is that spoiling it too
much? You want to see who's the top Tim Gunn and who's the bottom Tim Gunn? Is that what this is about?
Oh, we're both verse, thank you.
Yeah, we're both.
Oh, I love that. That sounds hilarious.
we flirted briefly with having an evil and good one.
But there's no evil Tim Gunn is the thing.
It's true. Yeah, he's just a nurturer.
He'd still be so debonair.
People love him so much.
You, John Flynn, you dressed up as Tim Gunn for Halloween this past year?
It was last year.
Last year, and I legitimately thought that Tim Gunn was at the theater.
Yeah, it was... I have to say, it was a last-minute decision on my part to do that, and I walked. It was crazy the reaction I got from the people on the street, like going to the parade or just walking down the street in Queens. All these Latino women were like, "Oh my God, that's Tim Gunn!" Like people love Tim Gunn, and people went. People would come up to me and just gush.
Yeah,
it was nuts.
He's like Debbie Harry to me. Like he crosses all demographics.
I don't know who that is.
Debbie Harry's the lead singer of Blondie.
I know who Debbie Harry is.
I was going to say, are you actually gay, John? Everyone knows who Debbie Harry is.
Like tough, big tough dudes love Tim Gunn, like the gay community, like your effeminate dudes. Everybody, like, I don't know where I'm going with this, but like any type of personality or aesthetic is like, Tim Gunn is awesome.
Yeah, he's pretty beloved.
So tell me about how the idea for the show kind of generated or came along.
Well, I did a show called, my indie sketch group, Secret Hospital, did a show called The Same Sextacular last summer at the Pit, and it went really well, and when sort of the call went out for pitches for new shows at the theater, I thought, what a great place to do a version of this show.
So before it was like a written sketch show by your group, and you guys all is all just you guys performing it, you guys doing sketches.
We bookended it with sketches we wrote, and then in the middle were stand-ups, improv.
Oh, okay. So it was a variety show
stuff.
Also.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, I was supposed to be in that one, but then I fell and hit my head and was in the hospital, and I couldn't do it.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awful. But luckily, we didn't run over that night.
Nice.
Because you weren't there.
Was that a dig? Was that a dig from Harvey?
I'm not sure.
Okay. No, we were lucky to not run over.
I see.
So the show is a collection of people performing bits that kind of celebrate the LGBT community or culture or lifestyle.
Definitely, there's definitely like an informed gay sensibility to each act. Because I don't know, we see it a little bit at the theater, but not. Not that much, so it's going to be fun to have a whole show of it that isn't Thunder Gulch.
Yeah, it's sort of the...
Yeah, we do some pretty heavy...
yeah, and it's awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
I love their shows.
Isn't that sort of... Anytime you get involved, though, in like saying this fits a sensibility or this doesn't, isn't it always sort of a tricky gray area? Like, how do you say, like, oh, yeah, that fits or that doesn't? It's just sort of a gut... Did you have any problems with that, like deciding what would be in the show? Or is it more like which performers were in the show?
I think all of our pitches were pretty gay specific.
I think people knew what they were pitching to.
I think we ended up going with the people who had the most fleshed out ideas.
Yeah, I mean, we had straight people pitch stuff, and there are straight people in the show. So, you know, we're not discriminating. Even though we have been discriminated against constantly.
Yes. I just feel like it would almost be like trying to say like, oh, let's do a punk rock themed show. And then it's like you get into arguments over, is this punk rock? Is this not punk rock? Is this...
What makes it punk rock?
Yeah, like that gets to be like...
How many punk rock CDs do you have?
I know it when I see it, but how do I actually like say that it is?
I guess it's like camp in that way.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
You just know when it is.
Right.
So...
You just have to go, but yeah.
So yeah, we're basically going to recreate the Batman TV show this Saturday. It's going to be phenomenal.
So you have obviously this lineup is a lot of hilarious people. You got Marcus Bishop Wright, who's great, Tim Dunn, Shayna Firm, Jeff Hiller, Corey Johnson, Kate McKinnon, and Megan Nuringer, all hilarious people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're really excited about
I'm
the
so
show.
I'm so excited for these people.
We're also going to, we're planning on having, because it's Tim Gunn and Project Runway is, of course, in everyone's mind, we're going to hopefully have a walk-off and some fashion, very strong fashion components and design components to the show.
There needs to be a design challenge. In this show, yeah. Or it's not yeah. that gay on the show.
We would even be a little disappointed.
Of course. Any other kind of bits or anything that you want to spoil or tease that people are doing?
Give us a taste. Give us something.
Yeah, come on. Give the audience something.
I don't know. We've got a...
do you guys not have any idea what anybody's going to do?
No, I know exactly what everyone's going
to
do.
Don't lie to me. Is it just going to be like you've invited 8 people and you have no clue what's going to happen?
Did anyone see the Slow Burn show on Monday?
No.
Last Monday?
No, I missed it.
Very funny show. Corey Johnson did a character where he plays a rapper who's clearly gay, but qualifies every super gay line with no homo. Like it negates his gay behavior. So we are going to see that, which I'm super psyched about.
That's great.
That's great. That's definitely a...
Okay, now I'm in. Now I'm in.
Now you're
in.
Okay, good.
Before I thought it was all bullshit. But now
right, because now you know there's rap. There's rap music involved.
I only
you're
go
all about
for,
it.
Yeah, rap parodies is basically the only genre of comedy that I pay attention to.
Yeah, that's the only thing that can hold Will's attention and interest anymore.
Hey, I'm honest about it. You come to me.
I appreciate
just
that.
Just the SmackDown and Lonely Island and you're out.
Yeah, that's right. Just perfect. Play a bunch of that. I'm like, that's comedy and everything else is empty for me. that's hilarious.
Yeah, that's really funny. It sounds like it's definitely going to be a great show. Because you're right, we have a lot of, I think we have a significant number of hilarious homosexual, is that the right word to use? I'm tiptoeing
around. That's fine.
It's clinical
queer
enough that
is
we
a good
can't
blanket
get up to
statement.
It.
Yeah,
actually.
Can I just say queer?
Yeah,
I think so because that'll also let bisexuals fall
it's
under
less
the umbrella.
Mouthful than LGBT.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want a tranny. If we do the show again, I gotta get a tranny.
At least
right?
a token tranny.
Oh yeah,
just,
we could
just have like with a like
yeah
like, in boxing matches holding up like the round cards like just a tranny just a link between sketches.
Boxing.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think of. Yeah.
And then one day they'll break out and no longer just be the token tranny Will.
Yes, but
right.
for now, that's
for
what
now,
I'm trying to...
For now, yeah, totally. Transploitation.
Oh, you're sketch linker. That's all you're... That's it.
Sketch linker.
That's all you can do here.
You people are good at that. I'll be weirdly specific.
That's what you guys do.
Specifically discriminatory in a way that only a real fans of a sub-niche can understand.
But yeah, we have a lot of hilarious queers
there
here.
We go. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Got it.
That's true.
Shayna, is Shayna Ferb, she in the sketch group Fearsome?
She sure is.
She does that bit where she like sings like...
A ventriloquist?
Yeah. She sings like without moving, like while smiling throughout the entire song. Which
yeah,
is sort
that's
of, like,
a...
amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, she has a whole band now, Shayna Ferb and the Upper Deckers. She's nominated for an ECMY this year for Best Musical Comedy Act. She's really great.
I like when there's performers who are great and established in the New York scene, but who aren't like... regular UCB performers who aren't like amongst the people to hear all the time when we get them in and they do they become I mean she's hilarious. I think it's great that she's in the show.
Yeah, she pitched her song it's about gay marriage and it's called Marriage is for Fags. And she sent me a YouTube clip and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
So I was like,
that's cool.
Yeah, perfect.
The show is this Saturday at midnight. Right.
Yes.
Saturday,
correct.
February 27th.
Make your reservations, kiddies.
Yeah, you can make your reservations at ucbtheater.com where you make all your other reservations. There's no separate.
Yeah.
We've united everything. There's not like a separate.
You can now reserve for gay shows.
We used to have a gay site.
Right.
Yeah.
Queers only.
Yeah.
It was
queer.ucbt.net.
Yeah. And the server was housed in the parking lot of a McDonald's. And you just go and flash your headlights.
Yeah.
There was a series of knocks.
Very odd that you know that specific.
For there was a parking lot in around where I lived in New Jersey, a McDonald's parking lot, where I understand that people would do that kind of thing.
Sure.
I'm not. I'm too prudish and naive to even comment on your bit. but this show sounds hilarious, so I want everyone to go see it. Do we have any other things we need to cover for these guys?
I don't think so. You guys have anything else you want to say or discuss about this show?
Let's talk about the other things they're involved in. Michael Hartney is on the mod team High Treason.
True.
Yeah, great team.
Which had one of the most hilarious matches I've ever seen a couple of months ago.
Oh, thanks.
Which show was that?
That was the one where with Marcus and Veronica did the hooker whose specialty was turning guys' lives upside down with her whimsical
Joie de vivre.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And then she basically just acted like Joey Deschanel for the rest of the sketch. And then Sarah did her one-man band thing. The mod team is great, so I recommend people seeing that. John Flynn, of course, is one of the story magnets behind Nights of Our Lives.
Where that
you,
is correct.
You specialize in having horrible things happen to you and then going on stage and talking about right. them. Right.
Yes, I actively, for the past 3 years, have actively sought out, thank you, horrible, especially sexual experiences that
Nights
I can come and share.
One, yeah, geez, dear Lord. Yeah, I'm almost blushing now just to say that. Nights of Our Lives is one of the hit shows of the past, like, 2.5 years at the theater.
Well, it's our 4-year anniversary this Wednesday.
Four?
Yes.
How old are we? Dear Lord.
Did you say 2.5?
I was like... Ballpark guess.
It just love you. Just pulled like that number.
That sounds like right. Yeah.
I was
so sure
say
of it.
Two, and I was like, well, the probably first, longer. I'll say two.
You're right.
And a half.
The first year and a half, we weren't really a hit, but
yeah. Now the show is great. It's really rocking. Yeah. And you have great shows and great storytellers every month.
Yep. Yeah. It's our anniversary, our 4-year anniversary this week, and so it's a greatest hit. So it's going to be me, Chris Gethard, John Gabers, and Anthony Tamanek.
Dear Lord.
Yeah. So
that's one of the highest percentages of people leaving with hands over their mouths is that show. Like
yeah.
just walking out of theater, like oh. My God.
Yeah, we've done some horrible yeah. things with our lives.
Why did he get into the safe at that point or whatever? Like, you don't even know what story we're talking yeah. about.
Safe.
But that show is actually this Wednesday, the 24th, at 9:30. So
correct.
You can also check that out as well.
We're busy boys.
We're very busy.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for thanks for coming on the
mafia.
Show.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. I really enjoy this show, by the way.
Yay,
you guys do a great job.
A lot of fun.
It's a fantastic show.
And don't worry about offending Birch Harms last week.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we're still kind of struggling with that, especially me, because I was the chief arbiter of that disaster and that screw-up.
We left Birch Harms. We tried to name every member of the Herald team Creep and left out Birch, which everybody knows that Birch was on Creep.
Yeah.
We just lost track of who he said.
Yeah.
But every improv nerd in the community has come up to me like, excuse me, forgot Birch Harms. Like, I know.
But yeah, so now you guys are forever in the podcast canon. So there you go.
Thank you.
Sweet.
When the first season DVD comes out, you guys will be.
Let's record some Easter eggs.
Of a podcast.
Okay, so you can see the same Sextacular this Saturday, the 27th at midnight for only $5. Incredible.
It's going to be fierce.
Make your reservations now to see the two Tim Guns. Thanks a lot for coming out, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
And we will be right back with something special.
And we're back. Okay, so for this third segment, it's where John and I have sort of an improv sketch comedy nerd out discussion.
Oh, yeah.
And today we want to talk about openings in improv shows,
mm-hmm.
the openings, which is sort of the most challenging, often the strangest, certainly like the most debated part of a show when you're on, or not maybe the most, but one of the most debated parts when you're on an improv team.
Behind the name, it's probably the most debated.
Yeah, right. You spend 4 weeks picking the name.
Oh, which is so stupid.
Oh, and here's categories of names that always get brought up before we even get into openings. Somebody
yeah.
always brings up a single proper name, like Larry.
Right.
That's always one. Then there's the intentionally overly long name.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wouldn't it be hilarious if the name of our team was the entire boilerplate of a talent contract
yeah.
or something like that.
Yeah,
or, our team should be called Objects in This Mirror Closer Than They Appear. Wouldn't
right.
that be hilarious?
No, it wouldn't.
It's not hilarious. Celebrity name, Alone,
right.
is always a suggestion. Like, we'll be Dennis Quaid. Which,
yeah.
you know what? That'd be great.
Right.
I'll to be honest.
Yeah, I would name a team Dennis Quaid.
Then pun varieties of all of the above.
Right, yeah.
Like, instead of Dennis Quaid, it would be like Dennis Quaalude.
Yeah, that is the deepest pool of name suggestions, and also
and sometimes it works. That's the terrible thing.
Also, the most gone to category
because it can work. I think that one's not necessarily a veto for me.
It could be funny. Yeah,
yeah. I can't believe you would even be skeptical of a pun name in any context. I think you'd be running for it.
I do have some boundaries when it comes to puns. But yeah, so behind naming teams,
picking your opening and what are you gonna do for an opening and what's
right.
wrong with the opening and we had a bad show, must be the
must
opening.
Must be the opening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
I get a lot of different kind of questions when I know when I teach classes, I get questions about like,
How does a team, does everybody do a different opening?
And let's just say what it is.
Sure. So the opening is the thing, like, let's just use a herald as an example, although there are different forms that use openings. But if you're doing a herald, the opening is the first thing that you see. It's the group, it's the thing that the group participates in to explore the suggestion.
Right.
Ideally to develop games and show each other what is interesting to them, other about the suggestion.
Right.
Ways to flesh out. Get things that you can use as games to initiate so that you're initiating with a premise or a game and not just half of an idea.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And so you get students who ask you about this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too. Because it's not easy. It's not natural. Like doing scenes is we get scenes. Like we know what plays are and we know like what sketches are. So if you've never done improv before, you still understand the idea of two people pretending to be characters, pretending to be in a location and talking to each other.
Right.
But what's an opening? Like every opening, it's usually more abstract and like presentational and kind of strange. It takes more commitment as an actor.
Yeah. And it's also one other thing about it that I just thought of is it's also part of a way to show that the audience that you are improvising with their idea. It's a way of saying
you're proving that this was not prepared beforehand.
Right. And this is what we want to do as a team with your suggestion.
I've heard it compared to the overture of like you'll go to a Broadway musical. There's the overture where they're playing snippets of all the songs
the
that are to come. Oh, really? That was a word I've never heard.
Yeah.
So, it sort of serves as highlights and seeds of what is to come later in your show.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, okay, the first thing I think of is just how many hours of my life I've wasted in rehearsals with teams I've been on arguing over the opening.
I'm sad that you use the word wasted. I'm sad to hear that that's the point you've reached.
Well, I guess it's like, it is important, of course, to discuss your opening, but there's diminishing returns on how much you can discuss your opening. Like, there is no opening that any 8 human beings on Earth will agree on.
Right.
If you have an 8-person group, you're doing an opening, somebody in your team loves it, somebody in your team hates it and is just doing it out of, like, teamwork. And then there's a collection of people who are like, it's okay or it works for them.
Yeah.
It's a big compromise, essentially.
I agree with that.
And after a bad show, I think the opening's one of the first things that people look to try to make better.
Yeah, it's definitely the thing when you're relying on it so much to generate the games and the premises for your show. That is definitely the thing that you will go to and be like, well, I didn't get anything out of the opening.
Right. Or the opening left me in a weird place. After the opening was over, I just felt weird and I wasn't ready to do a show or something like that.
Yeah. So what is your favorite kind of opening or what are your favorite openings?
Well, I'm an analytical logobot. My favorite openings, my favorite openings would be like pattern game. Anything that's like a verbal, very pattern-oriented thing is where I feel most comfortable.
Uh-huh.
So I like pattern games. I like scene painting. I like and monologues, like very literal. We are describing things with our words at our mouths.
Mm-hmm.
If there were 8 Will Hineses on a team, that's what they would be doing for an opening.
That would be my favorite team ever.
It'd be odd. either scene painting. But I mean, I respect other openings, and I get like I've been in groups where other things have worked. My first Herald Team Monkey Dick did sound and movement for a long time, and that worked great for a long time for us.
Mm-hmm.
It was just better if we just yelped around and jumped and made noises.
Right.
For whatever reason, at the end of that, we were funny.
That's the interesting thing about openings. One of the interesting things is there, even with sound and movement, there are so many different
types of it.
Descriptions of, types of the sound and movement and like who is doing it the right way. What is the right way to do it?
Yeah.
Is there a right and a wrong way to do it?
If you're doing sound and movement, are you allowed to talk and use words at all?
Right.
Or, yeah.
Or is it like a purely organic kind of thing that like there's no predetermined outcome or structure of it?
So what's the ideal? What's the perfect opening? Like if you're as an improv snob, not as someone who's on a team,
right?
Audience member. But a knowledgeable improv audience member. Okay.
That's a weird place for me to try to put myself in.
Really? I live that way.
Really?
Okay, so...
As not an improv snob, but an educated audience member?
No, yes, as an improv snob.
Okay.
Improv snob watching a show, what's the ideal opening?
I'll tell you what it is for me.
This
might not be the answer you're quite looking for, but to me, the ideal opening is one where at the end of the Herald, I can tell that they've used every part of the buffalo.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That to me is like they did this opening, they showed each other all these interesting ideas that they would like to play with, they then played with them.
Yeah.
and used all of that information in a way that satisfied the opening and also satisfied the suggestion.
Interesting. I would put it a slightly different way.
Okay.
But I think this is, I think I'm a little bit less pure than you.
Okay.
Like, I don't care if every part of the opening is used. I think that's impossible to count on. I mean, it's not impossible, but
sure.
I wouldn't notice. But, like, I want the scenes to begin faster. Like, I want to see that every scene starts, like, quickly because they're using something that's from the opening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah, I remember that. That was in the opening. So this scene is already off and running.
Sure.
Like, I don't want to, I don't like it when it, we have, if you have an opening, I don't like scenes that start very, very slowly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. On a like,
so it's like, oh yeah, they did a pattern game, or they painted scenes, or they did interviews, or they just did confessions, or they all got into a circle and moaned for a while. Whatever they did,
yeah.
But then when the scenes begin, they're like off and running in a way that I can connect to the opening. Like, oh yeah, I remember that. That was from the opening, and so it's basically the beginnings of the scenes come from the opening. After that, I don't care.
Yeah, I think I agree. I definitely agree with that. On a like, that's the less kind of arty farty hope
I
have for an opening where like.
Right.
Obviously, you want to establish these games or put these games out there, and then like you go to the back line and you're like, okay, I have two or three game
Things
ideas
to start with,
in
yeah.
my head. You know, this is the one that A, I did not put out there, and B, is interesting to me.
Right.
You
oh,
don't
yeah. People
like,
using your own ideas is never looks as hip.
That is a faux pas.
It is an improv faux pas that irritates a lot of people. It doesn't irritate me as much directly, but I recognize that it's a little lame.
Yeah.
It shows that it's not really group-mindy if you're using, you come up with your own idea and then use it. It's
right.
sort of like, yeah.
Yeah, you're not like
you're not
showing
in the
your
spirit of working with the group.
Yeah, you're not showing your group like, oh yeah, I think, I agree that that idea that interests you is interesting. Let's play with it.
But when you first bring up openings, though, the first thing I think of is emotional survival strategies on an improv team.
What do you mean?
Well, I think when you're a young improviser and you're first doing things with openings, it's just like learning how to do them and enjoy them. Like, it's like they're the most foreign part, I think, when you're starting. And mm-hmm. part of becoming an improviser is learning how to be yourself within them, sort of. Like, how to not let your opening make you worse than you would be without it.
Hmm.
Like, in level one, we don't really do openings, and you teach students how to improvise. And I think they have a certain degree of however natural they are, however comfortable they are. Then we teach them openings, and I think there's a while where they are thrown by it. And they have to get comfortable with the idea of doing that, and then they catch up.
Sure.
And then they are themselves again a little bit further along in their development.
Hmm.
So here's the thing. I'm on an improv team. The first and openings come up. It's like, what should we do for an opening?
Yeah.
I am immediately ready to compromise because I know there's going to be like some people who are like, I can't do pattern game. I can't just say words to each other. It puts me in my head just to say words. I hate it. I can't do it. It would be the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
And then somebody else is like, I can't do sound and movement. I can't jump around like a bunch of retarded people making noises and whooping my arms. I just can't be funny after that. Like, that whole discussion has to happen, and you as a group have to arrive at, all right, what can we do? And then, you know, and you have to pick something.
Sure. So are you suggesting that figuring out the dynamics of what the opening is with your group is one of the gateways toward group mind?
Yes. Yeah. That's a much better way of what I'm trying to say. Thank you. Well, okay, for example, like, sound and movement is not my first choice of doing an opening, but my first Herald team, Monkey Dick, that's all we did was sound and movement, and it worked. Like, I had to get comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And I was cool. It was a challenge that I was cool with, but it was still a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Eight Will Hineses would not do it, but one Will Hines and a team of other people where it's making everybody feel good, I'm down for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done openings in groups that I have not felt comfortable with, and I know that I've been in groups where we've done openings that other people have had to.
Absolutely.
And the key is... The difference between being a jerk and not being a jerk and being like a group-minded team player is being able to compromise and be able to
say,
you
have to give in a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I will acclimate myself to this opening.
The more veteran groups I get with, the easier that is. Like, everyone's kind of gone through it enough where they're like, yeah, we'll just try it. You switch a lot is what I find.
Yeah.
You do something for like a couple of months, then you switch it up.
Oh, definitely, yeah. You definitely do things for a while until like it starts to... either not work or you get to a point where like you figure, well, it must be the opening's fault, and then
so
you change openings.
Let me ask you, when you improvise, you do an opening.
Yes.
Do you, at the end of your opening, have some ideas stored away to start scenes with as a rule?
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, I got one or two or three.
I try to have
to start
two.
With.
Yeah, I try to have at least two. It's like...
Are they fully fleshed out, like whole game ideas? What kind of thing do you get?
My thought process when I come out of any kind of opening or something is like... It feels a lot more, and I don't know if this betrays a weakness in me as an improviser, but it feels more instinctual than like specifically written on a board above me in my head. Like, I have this kind of, like, flavor of a game, or, like, a tone or a color of a game.
Okay, right, right.
That's how it reads
to
me. So
you know it's
going to
be, like, a competition type of scene, or it's going to be sort of like a character
or
beginning,
like somebody,
or, like, a genre, a feel for something.
Yeah, like, somebody acted like this in the opening.
Oh, and that reminds you of, like, Colonial Williamsburg, so you're going to start, like, with some
right,
kind of Colonial
American
scene.
Or I'm
going
to try to do what that person did.
Yeah.
I'm going to come out and try to, like, make maybe one or two kind of base assumptions about who that person is.
When's a time in your life that, like, opening started making sense for you? Can you remember a time when they got, or was it like, I mean, you were so into it early that maybe you were just, like, embracing everything that came your way.
I think I kind of came into UCB kind of knowing what was what. Not, and I don't mean that in a way of, like, I knew
you
it all
like
and I was great, but I was aware of what things were.
You were comfortable with something that might be weird or foreign to somebody like me who sort of, like, was new to improv.
Yeah, and I was also willing to aggressively embrace whatever I was told to do, you know?
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, you know, I'll do this thing. As far as getting comfortable with them, you know, that's a whole different thing. There are some that I'm still not comfortable with totally.
I think I had, like, I went through a period of just getting comfortable with the idea of doing openings at all, where it was just, like, committing physically or committing emotionally or whatever, and that was, like, one level of getting used to it. But then really, this is the second breakthrough for me was when Besser started coming back here from LA in the summers and doing these workshops on openings with the new Herald teams.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, like, very particular about openings and the pattern game in particular. He would get, you know, he gets, like, the new Herald teams up and he just has them do a pattern game and he, like, slows it way down and is very exact and particular about how to do a pattern game for an opening. And it's all about, like, you're using this to develop ideas with each other. You know, I'm paraphrasing somewhat, but he's sort of like, if you were in a room and it was an audition to write sketches for Saturday Night Live and you had 10 words to do it, what 10 words would you say to each other to help develop an idea so that you could get this job writing for Saturday Night Live?
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, how can you use your opening to get the best ideas for your show? You know, he's very cerebral and analytical about it.
Yeah.
But what it really brought home to me was, like, I mean, it sounds dumb, but I had forgotten of the opening as something to develop ideas. To me, it was almost just like bonding in front of the audience and some kind of emotional bravery that
right.
I would do to, like, almost like invoke my improviser state. It's like, oh, I successfully did that.
Yeah.
And now I'm a man and now I have earned the, I mean, I wouldn't think of it in those terms, but that's the way I was doing
uh-huh.
it. It's like, I did it well.
Sure.
Now forget about it. Now to do scenes. I mean, I don't know how I got to that place, but that's what happened. And I don't think it's that uncommon. I bring it up because I think people sort of, like, they do a lot of gymnastics to get used to mental gymnastics to, like, be able to do an opening. But it's simpler. It's like, no, we're just trying to get your scene started.
Yeah. I mean, and that stuff that you talked about is, like, that's what warm-ups are for. That's what you do
backstage
or in the green room to
maybe
warm
I'm,
up.
Maybe I'm betraying awful shortcomings of myself, but I will, you know, for the first year I was doing long-form improv, the opening was a, like, challenge to be beaten, not really a tool to be used. It was never told to me that way. That's just sort of what happened.
Yeah, now that we're talking about it, I do kind of remember going through a period where I was like, why are we even fucking doing openings?
That's also a phase that every group goes through.
Yeah.
I hate openings. They don't work. They don't do anything. Throw it out.
And I think that is, I'll speak for myself, I think that has always happened in times where I've been frustrated with myself as an improviser or frustrated with the group.
Right.
So I'm blaming
the opening.
The opening
is a common scapegoat.
Like, if we just walked out and started doing scenes, we'd figure it out and we'd be great.
I think I might be horribly misquoting Peter Gwynn, but I know the sentiment is right, which I think he says, people will say to me, I don't like doing openings. Openings are gay. And he's like, openings are not gay. You do gay openings. Like, you just have to do them right.
Right.
You have to just know why you're doing them and commit to them and do them whatever fits your group.
Mm-hmm. You know what my favorite opening is?
I'll tell you. I would like to know.
The Invocation.
Oh,
I'm a
big
fan of The Invocation because I'm a
big
theatrical arty-farty.
Because it's very presentational and grand.
It's super...
The way we do it at UCB, I feel like that's one that's done differently in different places.
Yeah. It's fun and it's like, it's very involved and very energetic.
This is where you get an object and then the team goes through a phase where they physically describe the object using the phrase "it is."
Mm-hmm.
Then they move into a place where they're going "you are" and they're talking about emotional associations with it.
Yep.
And then "thou art" towards grand poetic associations of the object. And finally "I am," which is like these huge dramatic proclamations of what it means, right?
Yes. And it combines all of my favorite things about openings and about improvisation, which is grand theatricality
yeah.
and very specifically confessional, truthful things
yeah.
about our inner machinations.
It's a good one. The audience can see it connect to the suggestion very easily. It's like, yeah. well, they got the subject, and they've been talking about it very directly for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's satisfying that way. I think that one's interesting because it was like not – I feel like at UCB, everybody hated the invocation for years. Mm-hmm. It was like something you did in class. And you would never do it in a show. And then the Herald team, Mailer Demon, started doing it for an opening. And they, like, killed it. It was, like, so awesome. They would, like, just bring it to a fever pitch, mm-hmm. hilarious and personal, and then rock these shows out that it, like, convinced the whole community, like, yeah. oh, yeah, the
it's
invocation
great.
Is amazing.
Yeah,
what's wrong with
this? It's a
great
opening.
And then everybody started doing it.
I have never been on a team. It's been a long time since I've been on a team where the majority of the people liked the invocation.
Yeah.
I have brought it up, and it seems to butt up against people's tastes
yeah.
or what they enjoy about doing openings.
Sure, sure. I mean, it's not as free. It's very structured. It's sort of like a list of ideas as opposed to like interacting back and forth.
It could be a list of ideas. It's definitely structured, which I think I like.
Yeah.
It could come off as
every
feeling
opening
like
can
a
be anything,
ideas.
But they all do lend themselves to a certain type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like sound and movement is more like bravery and committing, but it's not really great for articulating sophisticated ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Pattern game, you associate to like really weird and abstract places, but it's very like cerebral and verbal. Doesn't have to be, but it tends to
yeah.
be.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, scene painting is environment and object and more writerly, I think.
Yeah, just
I'll do invocation with you. Let's do a two-man. My brother and I are doing a two-man improv. We're in Cage Match right now, so
yeah,
we're lucky to do shows every week. And when we do shows not at Cage Match, we'll do an opening. My brother will indulge me and do a pattern game opening with me because I love doing them. And we'll just do a two-man pattern game. It's hard. I really love. I would love to do it at Cage Match. I feel like. You know, I would love to try to do it. Like, and Kevin might agree to it at some point.
Yeah, maybe.
I worry because Cage Match is sort of a high octane, get going quickly show, and I worry that like some kind of. Well, let's talk about that. Like, if I'm such a fan, you'd have to hit it out of the park. Yeah, you'd have to really do it great.
Yeah. What were you gonna say? If you're such a.
Well, I mean, let's put our money where if openings are so great, why doesn't every team do them? Like teams in the weekends don't always do openings.
That's a good question.
And they're supposed to be the best and brightest, and they're supposed to be doing the show that is, you know. The moneymaker, like
right.
bring the non-improv crowd in and do it.
Well, let's discuss that because some weekend teams have done openings. Like
yes.
Reuben Williams.
Stepfathers have and haven't at different times.
Right.
That's my group.
Reuben Williams, when they were doing the As Seen on TV show, an interview, an audience interview, with
right.
even a little device at the end of it where they would show each other what they were interested in, what ideas they were interested in.
Yeah.
Because they would do that
so
television
they did do an opening for a long
thing.
Time. Okay,
yeah.
So weekend teams do openings
I have to
sometimes.
Confess I haven't seen them in a while. Their full show in a while. So
right now
sure
they just do two suggestions.
Now. Okay.
They do a montage in the first half and a mono scene in the second mm-hmm. half just off of a suggestion.
Death by Ruru used to do...
I think they still do the fucked up family first half where
yes.
they interview a family.
That's right.
They interview somebody about their family. That inspires the montage in the first half.
Mm-hmm. So that's an opening.
That's an opening. The second half is just a suggestion into a
right.
mono scene. Stepfather's first half does a deconstruction. We do the first scene. It isn't like a capital D deconstruction, which is like a very structured form from Chicago. It's like a loose deconstruction. We do an opening scene, which is there to give us ideas.
Yeah. So I would argue that's an opening.
What's that?
I would argue that that is
that
an
is
opening.
A loose opening. We are very deliberately using the first scene to develop ideas.
Sure.
And the second half does not have an opening per se. It's just off a suggestion.
And I think, you know, this is, it's hard to say whether this is the case, but like I wonder with those shows where you have an audience that just is coming to see
comedy
as soon as possible.
It has to be, if you have an opening, it's got to be accessible.
Yes. Yeah, that's what it is. It has to be. You have to really bury the seams of the opening.
But doesn't it tempt you? Wouldn't it just be awesome?
Mm-hmm.
To do the weirdest, most arty opening and have it work for like a non-improv audience, I feel like that would just be...
Sure, yeah, if you could do that, yeah.
I mean, ASCAT, which is the show this theater was built on,
mm-hmm.
has monologue openings where either a celebrity or just somebody who theoretically is good at telling stories gets a suggestion and tells some true stories inspired by the suggestion, and those inspire the scenes. And that's
yeah.
a very accessible opening. The stories are interesting. We see how they were connected to the suggestion,
mm-hmm.
and it's very clear how the scenes are connected. It's very satisfying for the audience.
Right, and we hear those stories, and we laugh at those stories, and we think, that was weird about that story.
And then we see it come back in a heightened way in the scenes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great device for a hit show.
Yeah.
But you'd have to be like the super pimps to get up and do like a pattern game for like a non-schooled audience and have it work. But I think it would be sort of awesome.
I think you could do it. I think you could, you know.
I've seen pattern games that it would work.
I think the audience, if you are a skilled enough improviser who has really mastered a pattern game or an invocation or anything like that, can do it in a way that is smart, sophisticated, can do it the way we should all be doing it, which is in a way that is smart and sophisticated and like shows where the ideas are being generated from. And
being
and
connected to the suggestion is important.
Yes.
But and also having your scenes connected to it is important for the audience's sake, so they don't think you're just farting around.
Right.
They can see the connections of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But I know with veteran teams, it's always just like, what opening, whatever, I mean, this is, I'm not espousing this is the best way, but like, it's like, what works? Just what can we all feel comfortable with? When I'm coaching a veteran team, right now I'm coaching People, which has a lot of vets.
Yeah.
We spent 2 weeks where we just did every opening we could think of, and then a series of scenes, and whichever one felt comfortable, we did in the show that week.
Okay.
Like, we just did every one. Let's do pattern game and some scenes. Let's do scene painting and some scenes. Let's do sound and movement and some scenes. Then we did the documentary opening that Billy Merritt used to teach, and it, for whatever reason, worked great. We're like, all right, we're going to do that. No more discussion. We'll do the documentary opening for a while. And then, like, this past rehearsal, we did sound and movement opening, and for whatever reason, that hit. So then they did sound and movement this past Tuesday.
Hmm.
And it's just sort of like, we're beyond the point of analyzing every little nuance of this. Just do it. And what just works out of the gate pretty closely.
Sure.
So that we're not like fighting to try on a suit that doesn't fit.
Yeah, you definitely want to be able to have fun with it as well. And I think, if you're a veteran.
I think your team's been doing good openings. I think Scooch has been doing really good organic openings.
Thank you. Yeah, we've been struggling with like, it's actually the most comfortable I've felt doing organic openings, and we've approached
organic
them from different
stuff,
ways.
Organic stuff, because it can be anything. Like, there's a lot of sounded movement, but it can be talking. Theoretically, it could be talking. Somebody could step out and do a monologue. Theoretically, somebody could like do physical, establishing something. It's I think the most open, potentially exciting, but the hardest.
Yeah,
and I think it's the acid test of, can you do an opening? Can you just do anything?
Right. Can you do an organic opening that actually generates playable ideas where it's, all eight of you are listening to each other, communicating with each other, and then everybody is coming away with at least one premise?
My favorite thing in Harold Knight is an opening that just is awesome. It destroys. It is like, to me, it's always a miracle. I'm like, wow, it can be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Scooch is doing good ones.
Thank you.
Arsenal used to have the best openings when Peter Gwynn and Mulaney and Gethard and all those guys, you never knew what was going to happen. It was literally something different every time, very directly inspired by the suggestion.
That's great.
There was something, they did one where it was like Congress or the Senate, and they all were like people debating things. And then before that, Optimus International a long time ago with Husky and Morris, mm-hmm. again, Gethard and McBrayer.
I can't remember what
Shannon.
Their opening was.
They were very sound and movement organic-y.
Oh, yeah. That's
just
what,
crazy.
Yeah.
Hyper, super
high energy,
committed,
right?
Very high energy. Husky would definitely be shrieking like a banshee at least twice every opening in a hilarious
That's
way.
That's right. I remember them being there being a lot of like high energy kind of pylons and stuff like that.
Mailer Demon's invocation was fantastic.
Yeah.
Fwan's sound and movements were always great.
Fwan's sound and movements were in between each scene.
Oh,
they kind of did an opening as they
Shoves did amazing organics too. The Shoves did fantastic. And Dillinger... They don't even remember this, but Dillinger's pattern games I always loved. I mean, when they did their reunion show this August, I was like, oh, you guys going to do pattern game? I loved it. They're like, oh, is that something we were known for? I'm like, I don't give a shit. I just liked it. I've been around here 15 years. Do what I say.
Yeah.
15, however long I've been here. Yeah. But like, they did great pattern games.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun when a team really locks into one that's great. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, you're right. That is a big part of the necessary magic of it, that you all are into it or get into it.
It has to look fun.
Yeah.
And that means that the eighth person who hates it has to be having fun, even though it's not his or her choice.
One of my favorite Michael Delaney quotes that I remember from like level two or whatever was, if you can't get out of it, get into it. So
that's a good one.
Yeah, that's what you have to be able to do. If you know that you can't get out of doing an opening, if this is the opening that your group wants to do, you have to commit to it and fucking get into it and get out there and kick its ass.
It is pretty great when they work. Documentary openings are fun.
Trucks did the documentary opening for a little while. Corey Brown, take a drink. I just mentioned Trucks.
Yeah, that's the drinking game whenever John mentions Trucks.
Trucks
would do a lot of like show-wide themes, like the Night of the Apollo show where Nate Smith was the made it so that the whole Herald was a Night at the Apollo and he was the host, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that was when we stopped doing the documentary.
Oh, good. Well, that documentary opening was a waste of time.
So that's Openings are great. I love them, but they're a difficult beast.
Yeah. And if you're in a group and you're arguing over your opening, my advice is stop arguing. You got to just find it on its feet. Pick one and just do it. And if it doesn't work, switch it next time. You'll find one that just clicks.
Mm-hmm.
My final, I know you're trying to wrap it up, but I'm going to say, like, okay. I'm going back to Monkey Dick again, my old Herald team. I don't think we were ever especially great at openings in general, and we would try different ones. But I remember one practice where Billy Merritt had been coaching us, and he was having us do documentary exercises because he was also directing the documentary. So we, as an exercise, we're doing a lot of sitting in chairs and talking. And then Secunda coached us once, and he was like, when you're doing those interviews, you guys are more committed than in a lot of your scene work. For whatever reason, when you're sitting in chairs, facing the audience and talking, I believe you're the characters. He goes, so maybe you should try opening with that. And then for the next year, we did the doc opening. And it was just because it worked. It wasn't like we did a big analytical decision. It was like we did it and it felt good, so we kept doing it.
Sure.
I think that's how teams should find their opening. And then when it gets stagnant, you switch it up.
Yeah. So teams should find their opening in the same way that I feel like they should find their name, which is like
just, you got to just kind of jump into something.
That's right.
Like you do have to veto the ones you absolutely hate, yes, and try to pick something you like, but it's a comp. Just pick something and make it work.
Yeah.
And then you'll alter it as you go.
I've always felt like the best way to find a name is to just play around together and choose whatever first inside joke comes
out. Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's how Dr. Awesome got their name.
Yeah, that's how Petrol got their name, too.
Yeah.
And I think, like, it sounds like you're suggesting that we find openings the same way, too, which is, like, getting in there, doing the work, and just finding something that works.
The first one that's halfway fun, then start with that.
Yeah.
And then go from there.
Because this is improv. You're never going to achieve your perfect scenario in your head. Everybody comes in with
whatever
an agenda.
Whatever your ideal version of the opening is, that will never happen
exactly,
on your team.
Exactly. The whole thing about getting into improv is you have to drop your agenda. And you have to come in with a loose agenda that is not so specific
and
as
respect
it is,
when somebody needs a break. Like if you're doing something for a long time and someone's sick of it, switch it up.
Sure.
1985 did scene painting for a while, and I think I don't think I'm outing him in this. Ben Rogers was like, I'm sick of it. He wasn't, like, angry about it. He's like, I'd be into switching it up if we want to switch it up. So we did.
Mm-hmm.
You got to, like, because we had done it a while. So it's sort of like it's time to try something else.
Spread your wings.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
That's
by
me.
Richard Bach and John Frusciante.
I ghost wrote that book.
Which is weird because you were negative 5 or 6 when it came out.
I was.
Yeah. Well, you were really ahead of your time.
I was a prescient.
Pre-fetus.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's what I love about you. Well, this has been something.
Yeah.
So that was our talk on openings. I want to thank Michael Hartney and John Flynn for coming on to talk about
the same
sextacular. And go see the shows we recommended at the top.
Mm-hmm. And go to ucbtheater.com. Go to ucbcomedy.com.
Beta teams are killing it.
Oh,
go
my
see
God,
their new
right?
videos.
It's
yeah,
ridiculous.
Go to ucbcomedy.com.
And I think you can email us now at podcast@ucbcomedy.com.
Amazing.
Yeah.
The email address is getting simpler every week.
That's right.
So give us ideas, people. We obviously don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
So throw us some suggestions.
Send us video clips of your opening.
Oh, yes. That's right.
podcast@ucbtheater.com, and we'll watch them and have a chuckle.
And the fifth caller gets a new Phil Collins album. Sorry, I haven't listened to the radio since 1987, so all my references are rooted then. Peter Cetera is coming to the Hartford Civic Center, folks. We got tickets.
He's already come and gone.
Oh, that's right. Okay, well, anyway, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
See you next week.
The UCB Theater New York podcast is brought to you by a generous donation from the Little Donnie Foundation.